Jackie.
Good to have you back.
Good to be here.
Some annual leave.
Yes.
Yeah. Called the whole podcast off.
A few production assistants also took a bit of annual.
Yeah, great. Can't wait to catch up.
Couple of round, buy rounds. It's all good.
Got a follow up for you. Obviously, remember the Spud Frawley story a few weeks ago?
Came on like an absolute drip
at the girls' footy.
What happened now?
Had the rematch on the weekend. And his team got up by a couple of goals, shaking hands with the players from the opposition team. At least you didn't have to cheat, you know, this time. At least you get the proper result, girls, you know, like.
Oh, what is wrong with him?
He was a coach for an AFL club.
What happened?
Got sacked.
True.
The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.
Benny, we're back.
We are.
Spud Frawley and sacked, as we've just heard. That's his history. And it is time for another episode of The Magoos.
Round 13, 14, 13.
Carlton 2 and 11.
14.
Goodbye. 14.
I have an R and a question mark next to it. I actually wasn't too
sure.
This
is round 14.
So the buys count though, don't they? Yeah.
It counts rounds.
Yeah, so yeah. Go on.
It doesn't. An absolute shining start here. Our guest might get up and leave then, the way we're going.
No, I reckon he won't. I reckon he's going to stay put.
Without any further ado, former Carlton and Brisbane Lions superstar, Thomas Bell joins us. Tom, welcome to the Magoos.
Guys, thanks for having me.
Yeah, Tom, how are we?
Very good.
That's the way. Now, is it Tom or Thomas?
Formerly Thomas, but look.
Yeah, amongst the boys.
Yeah, amongst the boys, yeah. Tom.
Tom,
yeah.
Tommy.
Happy. Yeah,
T-Bell.
Just whatever.
Yeah, all right, yeah, cool.
Go along with
cool.
Benny, Ben.
Yeah. You can call me whatever you want.
Yeah.
reading your statistics, the height and weight, you can call me whatever you want.
Okay.
Seriously, right. No arguments from me.
What is your age, Ben?
I think it was. Jesus, give me. There was a couple different ones, but it's in
a
the
couple different ones.
It was in the early to mid 90 kegs and
early to mid.
Yeah, is that
95, 96?
Even higher. Yeah.
Oh, I heard a rumor that you came back from pre-season one, you were about 102 kilos and nailed the 2 or 3K time trial that was in that day. Like, you wouldn't believe. Ran around Princess Park like you had a motorbike.
Yes. Oh, do you want me to tell you a story?
Absolutely. Oh, tell it. Tell it.
I came back quite heavy my first. So I had first year at the Blues, second year came back really heavy, like 105-ish plus. Maybe 2 or 3 kilos, 107.
QHS,
please. Yeah, so, had a shoulder surgery, just had no clue what to do in off-season, didn't train once, maybe went for 2 or 3 walks. 19, 20-year-old kid, bit of a disposable income, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday night on the beers. A few HSPs, you know. It wasn't good. And then, that was actually Mick's first year as coach of Carlton.
Well, that sounds like a good idea, didn't
it?
So my first encounter with Mick was about my weight, and then, you know, I was a long way back, so our relationship was tatters early. But no, we became good. He was a good man.
So before we delve too much further into your story, Tom, we're going to go through some of the big ticket items. There's plenty to talk about.
There's heaps to talk about
in the world of football, Ben, as we know. And on top of the agenda is, of course, the crowd behaviour debacle that has unfolded. And I'm not even sure where to start with this. There's been that many hot takes and opinions and, you know, like offended people, non-offended people. It's a real shit show at the moment. And
it's a good way to put it. It is a shit show.
Thank you.
Genuine.
Coined the term.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. I don't know if anyone's done anything right in this whole thing. So fans. And the general consensus was 6 weeks ago that the footy wasn't safe to go to anymore. People didn't want to go. People were screaming. They, you know, like, it was an unsettling place for people to go. So the AFL then doesn't just slowly say, oh, well, we're going to have more of a security presence. They say, we haven't changed anything. Mm. And then put behavioural awareness officers roaming around, you know, which is obviously a ramp up.
Yeah.
And they don't admit to that. And then there's security walking up and down aisles. And so they go totally over the top without saying anything. And
so what are they called? A behavioural
awareness officer. But the actual, the interesting thing about them, pardon me, that I heard was that they were patrolling the Docklands precinct as and like taking like statistics and noting down things that they saw in while a footy game was going on, and you know how people would act outside and how many people were outside at this time, and you know, so they were security, but they were on their break when they got photographed in the arena. They were going to get a coffee. They weren't actually the behavioural awareness officers, allegedly weren't roaming through the ground, you know,
they were outside
the crowds. Yeah, they were for general precinct behaviour.
Do you reckon they took down a note that the Southern Cross station was closed due to a trespasser on Friday night? I don't think they took that down.
That's why I drive on Fridays, Ben.
Do you? Mm. Yeah. That was difficult. What do you think about that one? The way they've just gone 0 to 100. Just people are literally scared to barrack at the football.
A bit too much, to be honest. Takes the fun away from footy, I guess. But yeah, I'm a bit. I don't know. It's quite confusing. If you ask me, do they get paid more than a normal security guard? I'm actually too sure.
Well, Daddy got paid as much as the security guard who tried to break up a fight that happened on the actual ground.
I mean, for those watching the YouTube. At the moment,
if you're on the line.
Right now, and that is some of the most perplexing. That's perplexing.
I've never
behaviour. That's not. That's, you know. So imagine the security debriefing before the game, saying, "If you see any scuffle, make sure you break them up." And this bloke,
they forgot to tell him outside of the footy.
I just loved how the emergency umpire was thinking, "Oh, well, don't you get involved?"
Yeah.
I've never seen anything like that.
That was ridiculous. I could not believe it when I saw it. I was like, baffled. And then he does that. The security guard like pushes him away.
What is going on? I would have loved the security just tackled the third umpire. The emergency. That would have been hilarious.
But like, it's the world. I think the world actually might have gone mad. Like, I think
for a second
over these bye rounds, like something's not right, because you know you go from the madness off the field, you know, from heaps of security and no one's allowed to stand up and all this sort of stuff, like. And then, you know, you look on field and Ben Stratton's pinching people in a fairly aggressive manner and then stomping on feet, and like he's had like a brain fade night. Like, it wasn't just and I mean, he's obviously done the pinching stuff before, as we saw a couple of weeks ago. And I mean, you've got to assume that it's a long running.
Yeah, mind you, that he sort
of does. But now that it's come to light, then.
Mind you, the whole Stratton thing, I completely blame the AFL on this one. They're not, every single year they crack down on something else that is just, which is physical in the game. So there's no jumper punching, there's no little, like these little punches. So obviously Stratton's not an idiot. He knows these sort of things. He pinches someone, or the stomping on the foot was, I think that's not on at all. But the pinch was sort of just to get a reaction out of Arazio. Lucky Fantasia didn't react, but in local footy, you hear everyone talk about it. If someone pinches you like that, you're asking for trouble.
Yeah, back in, you know, the 70s, 80s days of lawlessness on the field, like, just wouldn't do it. And I guess the other point to make with Stratton is that the guys he's publicly, like, that we know that he's done it to are two little guys who, you know, I guess probably don't pose too much of a physical threat. I doubt that if Big Tommy Bell was standing in front of him, that he'd be pinching him on the back of the arm, because he'd probably get sat on his bind. And you know, has anyone ever pinched you before, Tom? On the footy field?
No. I don't think I've ever been pinched. No. But I don't reckon he would be the only player doing that.
You're probably right.
You know, I reckon there's a lot of players that would do dirty things off the ball like every week. Mm. And you know, there'd be 200, 300 game players that would just do it every week. I have no doubt there is.
Yeah. No, you 100%. I think they're probably just better at disguising it, I guess. Plus, the bruises were coming up during the game, which is that doesn't help anyone's cause.
You know, when you're on the bottom of the pack and all those sort of things, you know, like, I mean, I guess that might be more local footy with the camera scrutiny today. But I mean, Jonathan Brown told the story on the couch this week that it was back in 2009 and defenders were doing the old, like, the ball's 100 metres away and they were doing like the forearm into the spine and into the kidneys and stuff. And he just rang Adrian Anderson, who was head of operations, I think, at the AFL at the time, and said, if if this continues and the AFL don't make a stand on, I'm going to turn around and knock the bloke out next week. And the next day, the AFL released a statement, and it said, we're cracking down on if we see anyone do it, it'll be a free kick, whatever, unnecessary contact, that far off the ball sort of thing. And
so then, all you have to do is threaten the AFL for them to do something.
Yeah, or just be a Jonathan Brown top figure.
Yeah.
And yeah. The world's your oyster.
Or ride a couple of tacos and you should be good to go there.
Oh, wow.
I think that's...
I won't be wading into that territory.
No, we won't, no.
And someone who also probably shouldn't have waded into similar territory was Jeff Kennett, who obviously had his wacky pills out and...
I love it when an old white fella, no matter their status, comes out and says, I'm not racist, but
because
you just don't need to listen to the next part, do you? It's just like whatever you say, it's just gonna be
Yeah. I'm not trying to offend you, but don't get offended.
Yeah.
Well, you're about to say something offensive.
Yeah.
And then he said that, and then he went on SEN Breakfast on Tuesday morning and talks about how he's not going to back away from his comments, and he sort of had a little bit of a dig at Gary Lyon in the process of that, and then like 4 hours later unreservedly apologised or something through a different media outlet. So yeah, Jeff, just the wacky world getting wackier. We just need 9 games all weekend, don't we?
I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I think the less games there are, there's the more stuff that's got nothing to do with footy that gets reported, because you've still got the same amount of journos. They should take a bye week, I reckon. You should have a couple of journalists take a bye week. Tommy likes it. I think I'm onto something.
You don't have to tell everyone when he likes your jokes.
Tommy liked it.
Okay, well, now that we've ticked off some of the big ticket items in the AFL world, we might have our first break, Benny Boy, and we'll come back and we'll delve into the story that is Tom Bell.
Beautiful.
So now, Benny, we're going to delve a bit deeper into our guest Tom here, as we like to do, and we have a big ticket item on the show. Tom, recently out of the AFL system, of course, superstar at both Carlton and then up north with Brisbane.
Yep.
And he's now back living in Victoria. But we'll go back to the start of his footy days, and we'll just give Tom the chance to set the scene when I can't ever imagine him being a little fella. But when a young Tom Bell first fell in love with footy in what isn't really a footy atmosphere, I guess, up north in Queensland there. Take us back to those early days.
So, grew up playing soccer.
What position?
I was in defence, and then because I had a big tank, they moved me into the midfield, and I just started playing everywhere.
So you can say because I had a big head, they put me out forward. No.
Do I have a big head?
I don't know. That's where I thought you were going to go.
It's long. It's relatively proportioned to the rest of your body. Yeah.
We're actually growing closer as this podcast goes on.
Oh, mate, what are you doing afterwards?
Start our own one day.
Oh, the Ben and Bell show.
That sounds good.
You're clever. Do you want to be our marketing assistant or something? Anyway,
I've got my own show. I'm trying to keep on the rails.
All right, back to... So
you were playing midfield for the under-9s up at Southport.
No, for Southside Eagles. It's close. I thought you actually did some research.
Did Tom Bell play football? No.
So grew up playing soccer. Probably wasn't till late in primary school where I had a few friends move up from Victoria. And they mad footy... and they brought me across, made a few rep teams, and then it just kind of unfolded from there. I went on to play for a local club called Morningside, won an 18s flag, year after won a senior flag, and then the year after that I got rookie by Carlton, and I guess that's where my love for football started.
So you were like pretty much plucked from like the local. So what sort of stand?
During those two periods. So we won the last Quaffle. That senior premiership we won was the last year of Quaffle.
Okay.
And then the year after was when it went into the NEAFL and was meant to be this big, beautiful NEAFL competition. Yeah. That's I don't know what it is now. It's
poor.
It's not poor, but it's just like our local Greensboro team would test a few of the NEAFL teams. So I was plucked from the early stages of the NEAFL. It's funny how it all worked. Like I'd heard of clubs
talking about me for the sort of previous 3 years, and nothing really came of it. I nominated for the draft 3 years in a row. Never heard anything. Only bit of information from a football club I'd hear was I'd get a letter from Geelong Football Club every year saying, you know, unfortunate that you didn't get picked up in the draft. Keep going with your football. Good luck for next year. That was it. And then the year I got picked up by Carlton, it was actually, I started to know I was on their radar because it was in a final and Wayne Hughes was the head of recruiting at the time. I ran off to the bench and I'd been to draft camp and I knew who Wayne Hughes was. I saw him taking photos of me and then I was like, oh, well, maybe something comes from here. My manager was pretty quiet with me because he wanted me to keep going on with my normal life. And then day before the draft, he calls me and says, Carlton are going to pick you with their first rookie pick. How quickly can you get to Melbourne? I was like, oh, next flight. 10 minutes later, Wayne Hughes calls me, says, look, if you're available with our first pick, we're taking you. Easy. Next thing, names come up on a computer. I'm going to Melbourne and pack my two suitcases full of clothes and away I go.
So, it's quite a story.
Really cool things have sort of come out of that.
So what were you doing at the time up in Queens? So what was your off-field footy away from your quaffle duties at the time?
I don't know. Is this a bit of dirt?
I don't know. I'm going to ask a question with you before you go,
I don't know. So I was, you know, I wasn't really settled in a full-time position. I did a little bit of a refrigeration mechanic apprenticeship. They wanted me to do a lot of overtime and, you know, work Saturdays, but I didn't want to do that because I still had, you know, I wanted to play professional footy. So I had to choose between that or football. I chose football. And then thankfully I got a job through a sponsor of the Morningside Football Club, which at that time was Trans-Pacific, which is like a recycling company. So honestly, like in terms of, I'm very thankful for the guy for giving me a job because I wouldn't have been able to earn money, but the work I was doing was pretty poor. So garbage truck picks up recycling bin. This recycling bin comes in. He does the whole suburb. This recycling truck comes in, empties his truck. I had gloves on. I had to sort through people's rubbish trying to find plastic and just regular rubbish. So I was like a rubbish sifter. That was my job description.
Is that what you had on your LinkedIn at the time? Did you have rubbish sifter?
Yes. No, and I've taken that off.
Yeah. Next time you go to open the yellow bin if you're recycling, just think of Tom before you.
He still gets flashbacks.
Yeah.
Those poor guys. Oh,
Tom, can you take the bins out?
It's a bad...
You'd be great at it, I reckon.
Would you be jaded by the fact that, you know, someone else is doing that job, so I have to do it, so he has to do it, so you put food scraps in the different things, do you think? Or would you have pity for the fellow sifters?
The poor man.
Maybe not pity, but just you'd respect it in a way.
Respect the sift.
Yeah. Respect the sift.
Respect it.
It's a brother.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, so that's what I was doing off field. And when I say working, I was 2 days a week because I was training a fair bit. Like, I was still doing lots of weights, you know, and all those things, and probably going out on a Wednesday and Thursday night as well. So, yeah, anyway, there we go. That's what I was doing.
Wow. That's incredible.
So from a rubbish sifter, the sifter, to a football player within, you know, 2 months. So, you know, I was so wrapped, and, you know, the way my life changed within a month was ridiculous.
Yeah.
Living at home with my old man, he was still making me meals. I was going to work. I was working in a rubbish tip to move into Melbourne. Had to live out of home for, you know, my first time ever. First time I'd even think about, you know, moving out of home, to cooking my own meals, to paying bills, paying rent. Like, it was awesome, but it was also a wake-up call. Like, you know, rookies back when I got rookie were on not much money, and I chose to live off Chapel Street, which my rent was.
Yeah.
I actually lived with a couple of Collingwood boys when I first moved to Melbourne, which was Josh Thomas and Paul Cribbin, who was an Irish rookie.
me and Josh were best mates in school, so it kind of made my transition to Melbourne a lot easier because I could, you know, move in with Josh.
What was that period like when, so you went to 3 national drafts, was it? Before?
Yes, yeah, 2. Yeah, I went 2. 2, but I'm nominated for the draft.
Yeah, so what was that like, getting knocked back twice?
Yep.
Then obviously continuing with your fitness and your footy, working at the recycling factory as well.
Yep.
Like just in a sort of mental capacity, obviously it changed for you, and that was awesome. But were there just moments where you just weren't sure for a while there?
It's not that I wasn't sure. I always knew that I could eventually crack onto an AFL list. And, you know, whether it took the first year or it took 3 years or it took 5 years, like, I always knew that I had potential to get on an AFL list. So, you know, getting knocked back wasn't really something that, you know, was going to stop me from continuing to get on an AFL list. And I think the biggest thing that actually helped me land on a list was my luck. You know, very much like Greensboro now, like I really enjoyed playing football and I really enjoyed the guys that I was playing football with. So in terms of, you know, going to the club every night to train or going to the weekend and playing football with these, you know, groups of guys that I, you know, really, really enjoy hanging out with, it made it a lot easier. And it almost was like, you know, if something good comes of this, then so be it. In general, I love footy and, you know, super grateful for the opportunities that I've had, you know, with Morningside, Carlton, Brisbane, and now the
Greensboro.
So when it turns from, as you said, you know, that the passion and, you know, you love going and run around with the boys and all that sort of stuff, when that turns into the responsibility of a full-time job and a full-time income and, you know, even after you progress from the rookie list and you realise, well, hang on a minute, I'm a first 22 player in one of the biggest clubs in the land.
Yep.
Did that ever shift for you? Did that change from being I'm hanging around with my mates and obviously I'm doing all the right things, but I love doing this every day. Like, did that ever shift to more of a job and more of a chore at any stage?
Yes, it did. Okay, so my first few years at Carlton, I, like any young player, you probably don't get your balances right, so you don't know how much to apply yourself to your job. You probably, at that stage, your priorities are a little bit different. You know, like on weekends after the game, I'd enjoy going out for a few beers when I should probably be staying at home and, you know, relaxing or recovering and things like that. I think when you get those, when your mindset starts to shift and you're like, maybe I shouldn't go out and have 50 beers after a game and, you know, focus on my recovery, I think that's when it starts becoming a job. And for me, that wasn't until my fourth year at Carlton when I started to play consistent footy and I started to really, believe I could play AFL. My first 3 years at Carlton were all well and good, and I probably just didn't realise that, you know, I had to apply myself as much as I actually did to a professional football career. And, you know, my last year at Carlton was probably my best year of senior AFL footy that I had throughout my 7 year career. And that's probably when I was the most balanced with football, my personal life, and football, my personal life, and, you know, just all other bits and bobs.
Yeah, cool. So in that year, obviously, you know, you're playing good footy for a big club, whatever, and you finish fourth in the best and fairest. Like, I mean, the world's at your feet. You go up to Brisbane.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all of a sudden they go through a period of change that, yeah, I guess, you know, you're going there as a big fish pretty much. You're going there as a bloke that's just, he's just cracked into the AFL scene. He's finished fourth behind, you know, some big names at a big club. He's had to go, pardon me, back up home. And you walk into Brisbane, and then within sort of, you know, what, 3 years was it?
I'm out
the back door. But,
yep,
like, you come into that club with the expectation of, because, I mean, as we all know, I'm a Carlton supporter, and at the time I thought, shit, you know, we've finally plucked the bloke from, you know, from the rookie list, and we brought him into the side, and you know, we were fairly compensated in everyone's eyes. But, you know, we've lost a really good player, and now Brisbane are going to get him, and, you know, he's going to turn into this beast of an AFL player. So where in your mind did things change? And, you know, you, not that you never fulfilled that, but the circumstances around the shift from the two clubs just changed so greatly.
Yeah.
That, I mean, how hard was, or how hard has that been to comprehend in the fact that you go up there as a big name recruit,
yeah,
into a smaller sort of club,
yeah,
at the time who were rising. How hard is that to sort of take, I guess, or what was it to take? I mean, I'm sure you sort of processed it now, but yeah, you know, to have to go up there and then it just not to work out.
Like on this, you know, I leave Carlton and then I only get 3 years at Brisbane. I do think about it a fair bit. I actually find myself thinking about it more than I probably should, because my reason in going back to Brisbane wasn't because, you know, I want to go back home and I want to be this dominant player. And, you know, I think because the club wasn't going great at the time, I think I can step in and make all these changes. That wasn't my reason for going back home. My reason for going back home was more a family side of things. Like, I wanted to be close with my dad, which was well documented at the time that he was a little bit unwell. How hard is it to comprehend? I think early days when I got dropped the first time, I was fuming, like, you know, I probably was out of form when Fags dropped me, which, you know, you've got to do that to players who are struggling. Came back into the side, thought I was doing all right, and got dropped again, and that frustrated me a little bit more. Went back to the twos and broke my leg, and, you know, at that point in time, like, I just thought, like, why me? That year was hard to comprehend, because, you know, I probably thought I should have been playing senior footy, or, you know, there's these other guys who are a little bit younger than me that are getting a bit more of an opportunity. You know, and, like, you know, they may not be playing well, but, you know, they're continuing to stay in the side, and that frustrated me a little bit. But I had to see it from a bigger picture. I had to see it from how Fags and, you know, David Noble and the other coach and stuff looking at it. They're looking at it holistically and want to, I guess, start seeing success, and I just wasn't part of that success for them. And then, you know, the year after my last year at Brisbane, I started in the senior team and then got dropped after round one, where I kicked, you know, a goal and had 17 possessions off a half forward. Yeah. And, you know, I said to my part, Alana, my missus, I was like, I just said, why me? And, you know, that was, at that point, I was like, oh, you know, if I'm not part of their plan, then I'm not part of their plan. And it actually helped. I know it's bad saying this, but the Lions NEAFL team last year was one of the most enjoyable, even though I got injured towards the end of the year and, you know, was in rehab and stuff like that. But the playing in the Lions NEAFL team last year was one of the most enjoyable years I've had with footy, because I got to play with, like, you know, at the time it was Ryan Bassanach was in the team. Ryan Bassanach's 150 AFL game player. He should be playing AFL, but he was in the same boat as me. Rowan Buick, 100 AFL games. Clay Beams. Who else we have? We had Jack Frost. We had, you know, guys who were seasoned AFL players, and we just knew that we weren't, you know, really part of that, how they were, you know, seeing it go forward. And we kind of just created our own fun within this NEAFL team. And, you know, I really enjoyed playing with those boys last year, but it was frustrating knowing that, you know, I probably still had, you know, senior AFL games in me and just not getting those games. It was, but, you know, that's the card that I've been drawn, and, you know, that's it.
Do you think that any of those, you know, how did that affect maybe like a maturing process or like your outlook as a person? Did that, you know, from being a bloke that, you know, would have always been playing in the seniors of sides and whatever, and yep, I think that's sometimes what, you know, professional sportsmen struggle with is, you know, big fish in a small pond to a small fish in a big pond. But so I see you, and I'm not trying to get rassy by any means, but like, so I see you come into a local footy system and be very inclusive of absolutely everybody. Whereas I think 8 out of 10 times, if you get an ex-professional into a local system, a lot of the times they can be closed off and they're not, you know, like as welcoming to, like you will speak to a reserves player the same way you'll speak to the captain of the ones at Greensboro. So like during that period of, you know, things not going your way and, you know, you going from fourth best and fairest for Carlton to playing NEAFL,
yep.
like do you feel like that like changed you as a person all, or was that always something that has been a part of your maker?
No, I think I've always been, you know, someone who's pretty open. I don't think I was ever that arrogant AFL player. I was always, you know, I always tried to make an effort for the new guys that would come to the club, or, you know, the NEAFL boys, the top up players that we'd be playing with. I'd always try and make an effort with those guys. And, you know, like, I don't want to pump up my own tyres, but like an example of that was like when I moved to Brisbane, I got young players to move in with me. You know, I, even though I was never in the leadership group or anything like that, I kind of saw myself as a leader, and I liked helping those kids out. And I guess, you know, in my last year, I had Cam Rayner and Toby Wooler live with me downstairs, and, you know, I could flick things to Cam if, you know, I saw Cam doing things that, you know, probably what I shouldn't have been doing when I was, you know, first playing AFL. I could say that to him, and I could give him little pointers here and there. And I mean, in terms of Greensboro, like, as I said, like, you know, the guys at Greensboro, I actually really enjoy hanging out with, and I think coming back to local footy's kind of made me feel a bit refreshed about my football. And you know, that struggling year that I had at Brisbane, where I could help the younger NEAFL players, I can then transfer that over to Greensboro, which I'm, you know, you get a bit of satisfaction out of it, you know, when you see a 19s kid do well, you see a guy in the reserves do well, you're like, oh, you know, maybe that could be something that I said to him, or something like that. Like I get a bit of satisfaction out of that. And you know, it's funny that we sort of talk about this. Like I never, after leaving football, I never thought I'd want to get back into the AFL system in a way. And you know, yeah, I think the longer this all goes on, you know, I might want to try and get back into the AFL system in a coaching role down the track. You know, because I was definitely burnt out from the game. And I just didn't want anything to do with it at the end of last year. But now the longer it goes on, I might want to jump back in. And I guess this is starting to flow from when I helped these NEAFL boys out last year to, you know, maybe helping these Greensboro guys out, coming in a coaching role at Greensboro.
So more of a behind-the-scenes sort of personal development, that
yeah,
sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I think, you know, that pretty well suited to me. Like, in, you know, helping the boys out that freshly moved up to Brisbane, you know, like, I enjoyed that. And helping them out, coaching, as I was saying before, like I enjoy that as well.
So you've only just turned 28. You just touched on you wouldn't mind getting back in the system.
Yep.
Like you still are young in that sense of playing. Is that anything that you would, you know, that is ever in the back of your mind still, just like to still get back got it? Yeah.
System. Do I still have it? Give me 10 beers and I'll tell you I've still
got it. Yeah. Ironically, those 10 beers would just put you back that little bit further from getting in the system. But I don't, yeah, I don't know what you're saying. Okay. It's all between the ears.
And the HSP.
That's enough.
More as well. What was the
question? Nah, you answered it already. Jake, do you have another one?
I've got plenty.
You have plenty?
Yes, Tom can still play AFL.
Yeah, that was the question. Could I still see myself playing professional AFL footy? I think I'm a pretty proud person, so I say yes, I could. But as a realist speaking, I will probably not play AFL footy again. If you had asked me that six, seven, 8 months ago, might have been a different story. I was keen to get back in the system when I got delisted. I made it really clear, like, you know, I was training pretty hard, and I was still keeping in regular contact with all the Brisbane guys and did the whole off-season program with them and, you know, stayed really fit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I didn't get picked up, it kind of just... I did a 30K road race, and then after that, I was just like, oh, I'll just enjoy Christmas.
And yeah. Beers, you know. Yeah. Christmas gone into March, into April.
Well, into where I'm
at. Yeah. Was there a, like during that period, was there another club, or was there a, was there someone else who sort of said, look, Tom, stay, Nick, or was there a, was there any ever sprinkling of like another rookie list, or Brisbane said, maybe, you know, we'll hang on? Or...
No, Brisbane had chopped me completely. Yeah. But no, there was, the, oh, not that I really know of, there was other clubs, like, you know, there may have been talk with my manager, and but, you know, me and my manager had this relationship through my football career where it started when I got drafted. I didn't even know Carlton were talking to him about me for probably months before them actually picking me up. For some reason, that just continued to flow through my whole football career. You know, even when I was getting offered more deals from Carlton, he would just be like, oh, you know, I was speaking to Carlton 2 months ago, they've got a new deal on the table. Why didn't you tell me this 2 months ago? Mm. Like, you know, because I think in his mind, he didn't want me to start getting ahead of myself. And, you know, there may have been clubs talking to my managers about me, but, you know, I wasn't privy of it.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, it's quite
do you think that was just a personal thing between your managers and yourself, or it was across the board, or you just
know, it actually seemed to work early days, and even at Brisbane. Like, I was never in a position that I'd get another contract at Brisbane, but you know, early days when I was at Carlton, I never had a contract finish. I always extended before I for my contract finish. So I think in his mind, that was me not, for him not telling me, was me not getting ahead of myself, because I was in and out of the team for those early years. I guess that's just right.
So you think from a business sense, you just thought, we just get that security, get that next contract?
Yeah, absolutely. And that, from him and my personal perspective, like, that's smart by him, because, you know, he wants me to stay in the system for as long as I can. He wants me to stay in the system for as long as I can. Let's just keep him happy. Just extend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then.
So before we get into a few not lighter topics, but, you know, a bit more broadly speaking. So when you left Carlton, just
you've got dirt on him, in other words.
Just before, or when you left Carlton, you were obviously heading back to Queensland.
Yep.
Was there a Brisbane Gold Coast decision? Was there an offer from the Gold Coast? Because, I mean, at the time, you know, obviously.
There wasn't a formal offer from the Gold Coast. Same sort of deal. Gold Coast probably were talking to my manager.
Yeah.
I know my manager was close with Scott Clayton. He's actually really good friends with Scotty Clayton, who was the head list recruiter up there at the time, list manager. I did have conversations with my manager. He's like, oh, you know, if Gold Coast were interested, would you be interested? And I've been a Brisbane boy growing up. I never thought of going to the Gold Coast. I always wanted to play for Brisbane when I was a kid. So, you know, Brisbane was my number one choice. But in saying that, like, if the Brisbane trade didn't work, and like that period of time, I really wanted to get, and probably had to get back to Queensland. Brisbane didn't trade didn't work. I would have, you know, tried to get something to Gold Coast.
Very good.
You go. So we will sort of, you know, as that was actually probably one of the most fascinating chats we've had.
Yeah, well, I was a bit stumped.
You've obviously, as you said, you know, transition to local footy, you're playing for Greensboro, Metropolitan League, Division 1 club, solid following.
Oh, we get it, Greensboro's all right.
Long history, you know, all these sort of things. How's the transition to local footy? I mean, you know, you're a bloke and you're, you know, now 28, as we said, so, you know, I mean, 5 years ago, Tom Bale's plan wouldn't have been to be playing at Greensboro, you know, at the time. So what are the differences in that transition now to going back and playing local footy? Does it just feel like you've stepped back into playing back in the Morningside days? Does it feel like you've just, you have this weight off your shoulders and you're out of this system and you're there, and whilst there's obviously great expectation on you, like, how has it changed for you? How has footy changed that mentality of, you know, like, going from that elite system back to the grassroots level?
It is less stressful. I don't think football players get enough credit for how stressful the industry actually is. Especially as a player, if you're in and out of the side, like, your whole life is consumed by you play a game of footy. Am I going to play the next week? I'm not even kidding. Like, you lose sleep during the week because you are scared of a Thursday phone call from the coach. So I think coming back into, you know, Greensboro football, Northern League football, like, for me, I am a lot less stressed than I was last year. Yeah, and you're right. Like, it is very similar to falling back in the Morningside days where I'm enjoying my football. I can have a few beers after the game. I can throw banter here and there without being too worried. Am I upsetting this guy or not or whatnot? Yeah, and I think just, like, the general approach of your teammates as well, it probably helps it. They're 8-9. But yeah, just the general approach of your teammates, like, you know, you don't have, for example, if you go to work and someone's not performing at work, they are stressed. Football club, exactly the same. Mm. You've got to read people's moods and see how they're going. Well, you know, coming back to Greensboro, it's like, you go to work, what happens at work, as soon as you come to the club is out the window. You just worry about footy and, you know, you're having fun with your mates, and I'm thoroughly enjoying it. Like, it's probably, yeah, it's one of the, other than really last year with the Brisbane boys, it's one of the more enjoyable years I've had of football.
Yeah.
So, you know, I say it to a lot of my partner all the time, like, I'm super lucky to have, to be honest, I spoke to a lot of clubs when I was moving back to Victoria because I wanted to get the right off-field situation for myself. Like, you know, I haven't really studied. I've been very fortunate to get a good work position out of, you know, the football club. But in terms of getting, you know, a great work position and coming to a great football club, like, I have lucked out. Honestly, it is, you know, hopefully Greensboro bump up next year's salary. Honestly, I've been very lucky, very fortunate, and I'm sure you could. Yeah. Vouch for me as well.
Yes, well, I mean, they haven't got me a job and they don't pay me, but yeah.
No, sponsor totally the show.
So just on that, something you said there in terms of, you know, like, the AFL footballers, you know, they deal with the stress, and I mean, people deal with stress in their everyday lives and in their work and stuff, so I mean, it's no different to that. But when you are that high profile sports person in the public eye, is there enough being done behind the scenes in terms of the stress levels and the mental health stuff from the AFL, because, you know, you hear that it's the number one concern, and and players are stepping away, you know, every second week now to deal with it. Yeah. And you can't, you know, there's no blanket plan that helps everyone, but from in your own personal experiences, is there enough being done behind the scenes to help players deal with the stresses they face?
I think there is. I think obviously you can always do more, but the AFL Players Association you know, if a player needs something, you call the AFL Players Association any time of the day, someone will answer. Someone will be there for you. And I think the way they're driving not only the mental health side of football, but, you know, other areas of it, they, you know, the gambling's another one they talk about that AFL players get into. You know, the way they're helping these guys deal with, you know, their problems are great. You know, and I can't knock the AFLPA in the way they help current AFL players, and actually not just current AFL players, ex-AFL players. Like, one thing that I found when I got delisted and, you know, was transitioning out of the game, whenever I had a question or, you know, or about work or football or what direction I should take, you know, I spoke to the PA, and I went to a transition camp with the AFLPA. like, they made my transition from the AFL to, you know, work 9-to-5 work life so much easier than I thought it would be. You know, and I think what they're doing for current and ex players is tremendous. Yeah.
Do you think that, like, when you look at it not too closely, and you see, as Jake was saying, every second week someone stepping aside for a while with mental health issues, that it doesn't look like they're doing enough, but perhaps it's actually the opposite, because they're saying, why don't, like, it's actually fine these days, why don't you take some time off?
Yeah.
Whereas maybe in the past, when they didn't do as much, these players weren't stepping aside to actually look after themselves. So maybe they actually aren't being encouraged because of the circle.
And I have no doubt players.
Yeah.
And you go into a football club every day and you have an app on your phone, which which you know, plug a number 1 to 10 on how your mood is, on how your body's feeling, on how your sleep was the night before. AFL clubs, you know, look at this data day in, day out, so they can tell when a player is, you know, having troubles, or, you know, probably overanalyzing things, or, you know, potentially might have mental health issues. You know, so it's, yeah, I think the more we talk about it, the more you'll find players are open to talking about their battles with mental health.
I mean, at our work and in like every other industry, there are more and more, you know, mental health days, like no questions asked, have a day off. So like, why can't the AFL be the same? So
yeah, right.
It's good.
Think they, you know, they're getting down.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Yeah, it is.
So as we touched, you know, you're now a seasoned local footballer. Seven. You missed one. Yes, with a mystery hamstring.
Yeah, I was away that weekend.
Yeah. I was going to say, where'd the hamstring go?
So we've seen Tom Boyd prematurely retire. And now it's sort of come out just today, I think it was, that he's going to be playing local footy.
Norwood, did I? Is it a Norwood? No?
Yeah, I can't remember. Where
I don't know. Yeah, yeah.
But so, I mean, he's going to be, yeah, so he's going to, you know, be subjected to, and I mean, you would like to depend on the common sense of people that, you know, over the fence, he doesn't cop stuff about his mate, but he will.
He will.
He'll cop stuff about, you know, from blokes that are, I mean, again, 8 out of 10 people, you'd hope 9.5 out of 10 people wouldn't say anything, but there'll be people that
go. There's always one at the local footy.
Before the season's out, yeah. Tom will have to come to terms with the fact that someone's totally out of line. I actually saw on Twitter the other day that they were talking, there was a video, and again, sort of taking off track just for a little bit, there was a video from the weekend's game where they were like, oh, this is pure passion, it's still out at the VFL, and it was these old blokes hurling abuse at the umpire over the fence, and everyone's going, yeah, it's great to see, you know, no behavioural officers there. Someone replied and said, this is all well and good, but I went to a Frankston game to watch Footscray, and I was with Lockie Hunter and Tom Boyd's mum, I think it was, so she's obviously a friend of his, and we had to listen to two guys audibly, verbally bag him the whole day about being fairy, about being open with his mental health and stuff. So like he's going to cop that over the fence. Like, I mean, and as I said, you've sort of transitioned back into that world, and you know, not for whatever reason, everyone knows why you get targeted, because you're someone that, you know, you can easily maybe even get a rise out of, or people know more about you than they know about the bloke running out next year who's just a chippy five has been
just number three.
Like, yeah. So like, how have you found that side of things in terms of, and I mean, you know, you are obviously a far more relaxed person with less baggage than what Tom brings to that same situation, but I mean, that still would never be easy to hear,
you know? I've come to terms with getting the arse from a football club. So early days, you know, you actually do pick up everything people, like, you know, when you're at a VFL game or AFL game, you don't know what people are saying about you. But, you know, at a local Greensboro game, I can hear everything people yell at me. And I think...
And that's just the Greensboro fans.
Yeah. You are yelling at
me. I love you, Tom.
Wash up. Why'd you leave Carlton? So yeah, I hear what people say. Early days, I get a bit hot headed. I've bitten back a few times, and then I'm like, why did I do that? Like, that's what they want.
Give them ammo.
Yeah.
What you need to do if they do yell out about it, you just got to. You should walk over there and write down this podcast and just give it to them, a bit of, say, listen to this, and that's actually why how it all folded down. It gets to know you, and we get a couple more viewers.
Business cards.
We might. We just put them in the footy sock. We might have to.
I've been heckled, but you know, in saying that, I've come to terms with getting delisted, and it's pretty. I hear the same thing every week from someone. How good were you at Brisbane, or how good were you at Carlton, or Carlton and Brisbane seem to be going well, and mate, I don't care. Just let me play footy, essentially. And you know, you're right, I'm sure he is, there might be that one stupid person or
one, you know, low life person that's going to whack him about that. But, you know, I think, you know, I hope for Tom's sake he is an adult and just realises that that's just, you know, he's a small person and, you know, that should mean nothing to him. Yeah, big Tommy back in footy. Good on him. I hope he finds his passion for AFL back, because he was a very, very good player
for the
Bulldogs in that final,
yeah,
that final series. And, you know, if he could, you know, if he could have a couple of years playing local, and, you know,
he's got all the time in the world, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. I don't really know. Is he 26, 25?
No, he's 23.
Yeah, see.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's like his second year. He left GWS, and then he was at the Dogs and Bang Bang, and then
wow.
You give him 3 years playing local footy, and if he loves it, I have no doubt that clubs will start knocking and Tom might get another chance on an AFL list if he wants that.
If he wants it, yeah. Yeah, you see him doing good work as well outside with mental health stuff as well.
Yeah.
So he's gone the right way about it.
Everything awesome. I've heard about Tom Boyd is he is not that arrogant footballer. He is a very, very good human. You know, and I honestly wish him all the best in his post-AFL career.
So, Tom, we've covered off all the... we've solved all the world's problems.
We have.
So far.
All of them.
It'll make for great podcasting, I've got no doubt. So, what's next for Tom Bell? You know, you say, you know, you've just started this job, you know, you're playing local footy again, but then you talk about perhaps the want to get back in the AFL system. Is there, you know, like, is there reality TV? What's coming up? What's Tom's now, you know, plan for the next 5-10 years? For Tom Bell, the person.
The 5-10 year plan.
What you don't have to have one either.
I've spoke about the 5-10 year plan before with a few ex-Carlton players that I still keep in contact with, and they seem to make it a little joke. But in all seriousness, my next 5-10 year plan would be, I as I said, like, I'm really enjoying the position I am in at the moment with work. Something I've always been interested in, you know, developments and property and things like that. So, you know, I really just want to upskill my my knowledge in this, and, you know, get to a nice position with work. I bought a little dump of a house in Brunswick 6 years ago when I first started at Carlton. I want to renovate that.
You good on tools as a rule?
No, but I'm thinking
you can
about
clean up the rubbish, though. Very good. Yeah. We'll be able to just diversify. That's a callback.
Yeah. More comfortable with me, I like it. Yes, I'm good at the rubbish. No, I'm actually, part of the reason I played with Greensboro is because Half actually said I can have a working bee at the end of the year, where a few players are going to come around and renovate my house for me. So
were they made aware of that in the contract?
No. Yeah. I can't wait for some of the blokes to get that phone call.
Yeah, you'll get
it. I'll pop over the valleys for the whole weekend and just digging holes for his
beard. Yeah, you might get it.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought. I'm not good on the tools.
So oh, okay. Yeah, but you, there's always coffee runs and that you need.
Oh, yeah. I renovate my place in the next sort of, hopefully 6 months. And then, yeah, who knows? Most importantly, we'll win a flag at Greensboro. There you go.
Well, this has been the Greensboro podcast. And
So Victoria is obviously...
I think Victoria, probably for the next little bit, is home. My partner is doing well down here. She's a lawyer.
It's good business.
Yeah, in the big smoke.
Smart man.
she local? Chief Victorian?
No, she's from Brisbane.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah, she's never lived anywhere other than Brisbane, yeah. So it's actually nice coming down to Victoria with her. Like we did long distance for a year when I was at Carlton. So she, you know, was almost a fly-in, fly-out type setup. Yes,
I'm sure she
that's,
loves
that sounds terrible. She was my girlfriend, you know, that final year at Carlton, but she obviously lived in Brisbane, so it was like every second week she would fly in, and, you know, she never really got a experience Melbourne for its time. Melbourne's set up.
Yeah.
So anyway, so she's she's loving it here, and I think she's set up here for a few, well, 5 or 10 more years. Likewise, and you know, we'll see where that takes us. Maybe we both end up doing well with our careers down here, and
beautiful.
I'm the head coach of Hawthorn, Carlton.
Yeah.
And she's a fully fledged lawyer, and or I could just be retired, and she can. Yeah.
What, fly in and out, or
fly
in
and out?
No, that's great. That's good that you've got some sort of, you know, vision, because AFL player wise, like 28 isn't too young, but
no,
it's bloody young in just in general.
Yeah, it is. It's funny, you get put into the older category when you're not actually that old.
Mm.
One thing I was very. You know, I really wanted to get set up when I finished up in the AFL, or being put into a good position where I can, you know, with work, set myself up. And, you know, as I said, I've harped on it many times, I'm very fortunate to be in my position for work.
So, as you said, you know, you have fitted in very, very well to Greensboro.
Yep.
Almost too well. Very just all of a sudden, like, part of the furniture, which is fantastic, mind you. But, you know, there's been some comfortable behaviours that have sort of arisen. The first night you asked the lady behind the jump if she would bring your dinner over to the table.
I didn't know you had to pick it up. Well, I thought you actually took a number and they brought it out. But
the one lady that was behind the jump for 70 people.
She was cooking as well. She's
on. I put back in my place very quickly after that.
And the trend that I benefited from that you've been sort of just slyly sort of doing is handing out signed footy cards of yourself.
Oh, yeah.
I got a nice little one there. What's the thought process there? Just to
no real thought process. See, you can't be telling people this because because what actually happens is these footy card collectors spend their money on buying football cards. They send you, this has happened a couple of times to the club. It used to happen when I was, you know, in Brisbane and Carlton. They'll send you all the footy cards they've collected of you to sign, and with a return envelope, and you send them all back. But you always take out 2 or 3 and just keep them for yourself. So that's what happened. So
you got plenty of love to give, and you just,
yeah, and you know, you were one of my biggest fans when I was at Carlton and supported
too
me.
Far from the truth.
Yeah.
Old man was really into Tom Bell. Yeah.
Was he?
Didn't see it myself, but
oh, just laugh. You laugh. Yeah.
Just like, don't offend the talent.
Are you comfortable with Tom to say that?
No, well, Tom, thanks so much for your time. Like, I think that's sort of a chat, whilst a lot of the time the Magoos were just talking about frivolous issues and sort of, you know, just bouncing around a bit of fun from two blokes who wouldn't know.
You know a fair bit.
But
back yourself.
Yeah, it was really refreshing, I think, to have someone who's been in the system and, you know, has gone through stuff that a lot of players don't generally go through and can tell a story that I think is probably not as often publicised as it should, as it's a vast majority of players, as we know, you know, it was a 3-4 year career and you managed to carve out a 7 year career and sort of came to the end when you sort of felt like it wasn't really ready to. So we really appreciate your time coming on the Magoos. We wish Greensboro the best of luck going forward, and that you sign that Buddy Franklin type deal that's on the table, the extension, because you said yourself that you didn't let your contracts run out. You always signed the extension before it got there. So
we're actually here tonight to...
But no, Tom, thank you very much for joining us on the Magoos. Yeah. Much, much appreciated. We hope that hope your brand does well out of feature on such a prestigious program.
Nah, thank you very much. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Benny boy, what a great chat with our new best friend. I mean, me and Tom are already good friends.
But now you're three of us could hang out at times. If
that was something, I guess, that we sort of did a little bit more last year on the Magoos. We would like to go in depth with our guests. And we've got a few coming up that we might do similar with. We obviously had some good footy chats at the start. And then I guess, to hear that story, as we said, you know, not often told, those sort of those sort of stories. So it was great for the big fella to come in and tell his footballing journey, which was cool. So we've got another bye week, so a few shorter games, but Thursday night footy
is back. 8:10 start local time, which is not, I'm not happy about.
Well, local time here.
East Coast time?
Yes, and not local time, because the game is being played in Perth.
So
it's 6:10 local time. that's a great way to finish the show. Tell you what, we're back, ladies and gentlemen.
Pleasure to have Tommy Ballon. It was great.
Yeah, we might have got serious for about an hour in the middle there, but we still finished with a laugh. And how we like to. So make sure you like, subscribe, share, especially this episode, one of the greats with the big fella, Tommy Bale. So thank you, Magoo's viewers and listeners, and we'll see you next week.